please help me welcome Anna Bayless Arthur. Hello, everyone. Can everybody hear okay? Okay, great. Just get myself situated here. Thank you so much, everybody, for sticking around to hear this talk. Been really excited to get this work up. It's been quite a few months of preparation, getting ready. So it's just really wonderful to get to this point and be able to share a little bit with all of you. I'd like to just start by talking a little bit about the title for the show, Come Back to the River. This actually originated as a kind of mantra that I developed while running one of my absolute favorite places along the Mill River here in Northampton. Been running and walking on these trails for many, many years. It's such a wonderful place. But over the years, in recent years, I've been finding it, you know, increasingly difficult to just stay in my body, be present to my surroundings, you know, just in this state of rumination. I'm sure a lot of you can relate to that. And so I actually started repeating this phrase, come back to the river, as a way of calling myself back to a kind of presence to my surroundings, a beautiful river, quite literally, that has wound through my life for all these years, and also just coming back to a more embodied experience and just more aware of everything around me. And as I was thinking about this concept, this kind of calling back, I realized that this is a larger thing for me, and it's really has a lot to do with the kind of creative work that I've been doing for most of my life, coming back into my body and coming back into an embodied experience, and also just aware of all of the wonder that is around me all the time. So I felt that it was appropriate to call this show Come Back to the River with that notion in mind. And also, you know, as I've been preparing to talk a little bit about this work, I just realized there also was not going to be a way to talk about my creative practice without situating it in this moment we're in, this historical context in which, you know, it's a deeply troubling time in which so much is under attack. As I'm sure you all are all aware, you know, history, truth, our fundamental humanity is all under attack right now. And so, you know, I wish I could say that I you know, art is some kind of, you know, solution, and I'm not going to say, you know, anything as grand as that, but just to say that, you know, any action that calls us back into our bodies and into our sense of connection with each other and with our surroundings and the ecosystem is imperative right now. And so I feel, you know, that this is just a part of something that is meaningful. And also, you know, I think that, you know, this concept of calling back is radical, and I think I mean radical in terms of the roots of that word, from the root radix, which literally means root. So this kind of idea of coming back to our roots. And when you think about, you know, the last, say, 20 years and this kind of just expansion of big tech and these very calculated algorithms that are pulling us, you know, into the marketplace, seeking to pull us into the marketplace. And I feel that, you know, this kind of work, this more embodied work, this work that brings us back to our sense of interconnectedness, is very much antithetical to that other effort. And so in that sense, I think it is quite radical and important. So, you know, with all of that in mind, I also feel that this work over the recent years has become something in my life that I feel most approximates prayer. Just to say a little bit more about that, I did not grow up with organized religion. I had hippie parents, and they were actually quite anti-religion, you know, which I thought, you know, now was a bit of a disservice. I would have liked to have more understanding of world religions and, you know, as a way of understanding culture. But over the years, I've kind of come into my own definition of what that means, what that word means to me. And I think, you know, any act in which I feel a connection to something larger than myself, and if while I'm working on a drawing and painting, you know, I feel all kinds of things moving as we do, right, throughout the day. Grief and longing, you know, jubilation or excitement or a sense of one's own mortality. These are all things moving through us. And if, you know, those are moving through me while I'm working on a piece, then, you know, it's something that I feel is connecting me to other people and to, you know, beyond human beings and connecting me just to the world at large. And so for me, you know, that being, you know, intentionally in that kind of space is a form of prayer. And so that's kind of how I've come to see it. And, you know, this work, this coming to the page and creating has been something I've done most of my life from the time I was like a really tiny child. From the time my little hand could hold a number two pencil, I was seeking out any kind of blank surface I could get my hands on, even like the backside of an old package of cardboard or any kind of surface I could find. And you know, for me as a child, it was a place to create a world. It was a place for order and precision. Which was very reassuring to me in some ways, and it still is. You know, these to me still are portals into worlds. My process for creating this work is it's very playful and intuitive. I'm creating these, you know, careful layers of transparent pigments and it's out of those layers that these worlds start to emerge. You can see that like forms emerge and disintegrate. You know, I'm sure you can also recognize there's a very explicit organicism in the work. Things familiar and unfamiliar. You might see references to biology, landscape, mechanical things, composite bodies. I'm very interested in the relationships that exist between all of these things. And I think, you know, what one might see is or feel really is maybe an ancient memory that is moving, you know, within us and that we carry with us. Thinking about, you know, primordial water worlds, the emergence of basic life forms, surfaces of stone, mineral, dark voids. You know, I think there's a tapping of perhaps some latent memories that are moving within us and that are getting at a kind of, you know, interconnectedness, and I'm really interested in, you know, just playing with those relationships, and, you know, it's in a lot of ways, you know, I've come to think that maybe my work has been about this one thing, which is these, you know, the interconnectedness of of all things. And I feel that that just keeps sort of replaying in these different ways. I mean, and in that way, you know, I feel like there are sort of endless possibilities because the world could contain everything, you know, and every possibility. People often have asked me, you know, am I interested in going out in nature and doing drawings and, you know, plein air painting? And the answer has always been kind of no. Actually, I do spend a lot of time going out into the woods and observing all the wonderful forms. But my predominant feeling when I'm out there is just everything is already here in its like most perfect state, and I don't feel the need to duplicate it or render it as it is. But instead, I'm interested in creating kind of adjacent worlds. And you know, within those adjacent worlds, I think I'm most fascinated with states of transformation, processes of growth and decay, regeneration. I think we just can learn so much about these life cycles from being out there. When you think about the life of a tree and observing, you know, that arc and all the different states of transformation, and you know, a tree in death, you know, is it really dead? It's still so alive and bursting with life, and I think it really teaches us about these perpetual states of transformation. And I find each phase of these life cycles to be just so beautiful. This triptych here on the end was the last thing I finished before this show went up, and it's called The Lesson of Trees. And so it was very much that I had in mind, of just this lesson of our lives being in these states of transformation. And of course, you know, that echoes our own body, right? And so it can teach us that there's always, you know, a transformation even in death. And so I think that that's just a beautiful lesson to take in that trees are giving to us. As a young kid, I didn't really have art exposure, art lessons, art classes, until I got myself to college, and it was an utterly thrilling time for me to finally have a little bit of exposure. At that time, I got really into looking at the drawings of the old masters, and particularly Da Vinci and his studies of anatomy and mechanical things, machines, biology. What an incredible draftsperson. But also with the old masters, they had this technique of laying down a wash of pigment, either watercolor or ink. And then with black and white chalk, they would start rendering form, creating the illusion of form. It was a kind of expedient way to draw, because you'd have your middle tone laid down there, and then you were bringing in your darks and lights. And I started using that technique, making drawings as a young person. And over the years, I just started creating more and more dynamic and textural grounds, and those were the surfaces from which I was kind of pulling these compositions. And then at a certain point some years ago, I had a kind of revelation about this way of working, which I had watched, and maybe some of you have seen this, the documentary Werner Herzog made, Cave of Forgotten Dreams. Incredible documentary about the Chauvet caves in France. They were discovered in the mid-90s. It was an absolutely incredible discovery of this vast cave network that had been sealed off by a kind of landslide, and therefore the artwork that they discovered inside, which was over 30,000 years old, and at the time some of the oldest artwork ever found. And it was impeccably preserved because it had been sealed off from the elements. And some of the, I mean, if you haven't seen this documentary, it is mind-blowing. But the thing that that really struck me and that was kind of a revelation was they were talking about the artists working on the surface of stone, this highly textural, modeled surface. Imagine all the different earthy colors, and also that they were working, of course, by the light of a torch. So there would be this flickering light as they're pulling these different forms out of that stone surface. And I had this moment of realizing like that this way that I've been working of creating these like highly textural grounds and seeing these compositions emerge there, that there was this lineage going back tens of thousands of years, and I felt so reassured. Okay, all right, I'm doing something that has been happening for a long time, and maybe we don't understand it, and it's this mysterious kind of way of expressing some part of our humanness. And I mean, when you think about this record of the human endeavor that's been happening for these tens of thousands of years, I mean, and one more note about that documentary was in one area of the cave, they did some carbon dating and realized that these layers of drawings that were on top of each other, in some cases, there was like 1,000 years in between the layers of the drawings. If you can just wrap your mind around what that means, it's kind of hard to comprehend that kind of passage of time of these human beings coming back again and again to lay down these drawings, and that was like that was the first gallery, right? And so here we are, and it's still happening. And I don't know, you know, it's so mysterious, but I think that's a really important point of reference. It is for me. So, speaking of archaeology and things archaeological, as I was preparing for this talk. I actually had a dream, and in the dream I was giving the talk. And in this dream talk, I was creating an analogy between my work and the work of archaeologists when they're digging in the dirt, and then suddenly this tiny piece of bone emerges. And so with like the most fastidious care and precision, they're chipping away tiny tools and brushes. And slowly this entire skeleton emerges. And then you have this complete thing, right, that can be studied. And I realized, you know, that dreamer was actually quite right. That was such a good analogy that she came up with. That is so much how my work evolves. It often is this kind of essential thing that appears, and then the composition will unfold from there. So that was an exciting thing to discover and have happen in my dream. So I'm going to wrap up, but as I conclude, I just want to circle back to where I started, where I'm situating, you know, this work within this historical moment. I really don't think, you know, any artist can be separated from the historical context, from within which we exist and from which we generate our work. And, you know, I think what I'm getting at here is, you know, what I hope I'm getting at, I guess, is a language that we all contain. It's not so much, you know, me and my personal expression. You know, I think we contain these movements and these forms, and perhaps that is why the viewer might feel a kind of familiar tug. As human beings, you know, we have a tendency to separate ourselves from the natural world as if we were not fundamentally a part of it. And, you know, I think just in this moment, we desperately need to come back to this kind of understanding of our part in this one living thing. So any way that we can find to find those points of connection, I think are just so deeply imperative right now. So thank you all so much for listening to these stories about the work and about my life and philosophy. I'd be so happy to answer questions if anybody has questions about specific pieces or anything I talked about. I'm really glad to answer. Yeah, thank you. Oh, oh, yeah. Yeah. So she's asking, do I do preliminary sketches and do I sometimes have to kind of paint over things and start all over? The answer is yes, I do sometimes have sketches that I sort of generate in the beginning to work from. They're never set in stone, they do evolve. And often they're very loose, so they could be just mapping like a general movement in the composition. And I'm not even sure, you know, what kind of forms are going to emerge. And I do sometimes rework pieces. This big painting here, this bluish painting, that's been reworked three times. There are times where I just can't get satisfied or something's just bugging me. And then I will just keep going back until the problem is solved, whatever it is. But sometimes it's hard to even know exactly what the problem is. But I enjoy that process. Yeah. Yes. Thank you. Yeah, I'm very much a line person. I have a lot of very sharp pencils, and I love charting movement through space. I mean, in that way, I feel, you know, there's a relationship to dance or music. There's a lyrical quality because, I really feel that it's, you know, I'm charting this movement, and so I love to preserve those lines and some of the initial lines that get laid down. I like to still see them. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you. So this level that you're seeing here is about 2 years of work, I'd say. I do have a full-time day job, so, you know, weekends are my time to bust stuff out. But I feel that, you know, this more recent body of work, it has gotten a lot bolder. The scale of some of the forms, particularly these larger pieces, they feel really like body-sized in relation to my own body. So I've been really enjoying sort of bumping up the scale in that way. And I think, you know, the last piece I created, that triptych, as I mentioned, yeah, I've just been so deeply inspired by the landscape that surrounds me, you know, where I live and where I spend a lot of time. And so I think that has started to come into the work more and more, and in some ways more literally, because it just feels like an extension of my own body as I've been here for so long in that way. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
The cocoon shapes, yeah.
I do see those cocoon shapes as figures. And, you know, I used to do a lot of figure drawing, and I find it to be just an endlessly fascinating form. But I've kind of honed it down to these cocoon shapes. But I do feel that they are referencing bodies, you know, if not human bodies, then just this kind of sense of a body in space. This piece here called The Conversation that you can see on the postcard, it very much to me is about a relationship between two beings and this kind of energy, this mysterious energy that's traveling, you know, that's larger than the two beings, but looping between them, and also this dynamic energy that's kind of constantly flowing between the two. And it just felt so much like a conversation there. So, of course, that's what the title became. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Hi. Good question. Have I reworked older work from decades ago? And no, but it is so interesting to pull old work out and realize that there's this continuity. It's so exciting, and I often have this feeling of like, who made this? I feel such a sense of separation and fascination, but also seeing, yeah, that continuity, that it is still the same artist sort of rippling through. But that is a cool idea. I mean, that would also be really efficient in terms of my storage issues if I just kept recycling art. Thank you for that question. Yeah. Not always. Sometimes they do come early on, but then other times they just don't get a title, and I can't ever nail one down. But it seems to vary. Sometimes right away I have a sense. That Lesson of Trees painting came pretty early on, and of course I'll try to write it down, otherwise it'll just slip right away. So, yeah. Well, thank you all so much. This has been really a fun opportunity to be able to just share a little bit about all of this work and what it is I think I'm doing. So thank you.